How frequent and what methods do you think are used by their handlers to make sure that their agents are still around and ready to go? And would you say that they have weapons now stored in the United States, and what type of facilities would you guess that they are stored in?
Well, that's a little broad for me to give you a really definitive answer. But I would say that first off, they come into the country so easily. I mean, one of the 19 hijackers I can't remember all the details, but we're letting guys show up without a visa, without a passport, saying that they need asylum. We're interviewing them and letting them out on the street, never to be seen again. We don't have real security here in the United States. We're very naive. And I think our regulations are, for me, it's simple. You want to visit the United States, you're a guest. You need a police check from your home country. And if enough of you end up being bad boys, we close the border to that country. For me, this is not hard. Obviously, there are a lot of politicians. There are a lot of corrupt deals going on. There's an enormous amount of Saudi money being channeled to every U.S. congressman and political figure of consequence. George Bush doesn't hold hands with just about everybody. He only holds hands with Saudi princes and the occasional Chinese tennis player coach. I'm told by the Dutch, by the way, a completely sober Dutch intelligence officer told me the Chinese have pictures. They got young George so drunk when he was a teenager in his father's house in Beijing that I think they got compromising pictures, whether he was actually homosexually engaged or not. It looks like it. I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what a sober Dutch intelligence officer told me. So I just share this. I will also mention to you that John Kerry and others have been talking about Bush's hanging out with the notorious black drag queen at Harvard. And when Kerry says he knows Bush, I think he knows Bush in terms of drugs, alcohol, and drag queens. So whatever. I don't know what the truth is, but I think Bush is a walking lie. I mean, I think his faith is false. His mind is shallow. His heart is actually much more vicious and evil than people realize. And I think he is starting to become mentally unbalanced. And there are reports starting to emerge now on congressional newspapers about his staff being terrified that Bush is going to lose it before the election. For me, the ideal thing would be McCain, not Giuliani, as vice president, and Bush goes nuts in January. But we'll see. Yes, sir.
So what does a gay libertarian computer scientist do to get into the intelligence sector?
Pretend to be a Pakistani.
I've got the beard.
Hey, no sweat. You can do it because they don't speak Arabic. Okay, so just pretend to be an educated Pakistani with really good gouge. The libertarian's not an obstacle. Actually, the gay isn't an obstacle either. As long as you're declared gay and can't be blackmailed, these days I think they're relaxing that too. Where most people lose it is on habitual use of strong drugs. And if that's not an issue for you, I encourage you to apply.
Ball soda's all right, right?
What's that?
Ball soda, that's okay?
All the way to Jolt.
All right.
Now, are you wearing panties or underpants? that's what Bill Clinton should have said. Which happens to be my answer also. Go ahead.
First of all, thank you for coming out.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I really appreciate it. You mentioned that you helped create open source intelligence agencies in multiple foreign countries.
Right.
I wanted to solicit more information out of you.
Well, I've kind of started to forget the list, but basically what I do is I go in and I lecture and I catalyze, and then they throw me out of the country and do stuff and don't tell me about it. But among the best are the Swedish. I didn't help the Norwegians. They did it on their own, and everyone respects them enormously. The British military screwed it up. The Australians have three OSINT centers, a military, a law enforcement, and one other. And so basically, I've just been going around since 1992 when I hosted this conference. I've trained over 7,000 people, and indirectly, probably another 21,000. And in fact, one of my favorite photos in my office is of a Ukrainian military officer standing next to a computer which has my website on it. One of my State Department running buddies was in the Ukraine, and they brought him in as a diplomat, and they said, "This is what we use, open sources." And it was my website. And so he took a picture and gave it to me. And I've been told that I've influenced people around the world that I have no clue exist. Part of the problem is that the conventional bureaucracies in all of these countries are fighting open source intelligence. Like real men or real spies don't do open source intelligence. I was having a semi-clandestine meeting in France with the colonel in charge of French open source intelligence for General Heinrich. I've spoken in the French Senate twice. He said to me, "Mr. Steele, I can't get them to take open source seriously." I said, "Look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a cover sheet, code word Oscar Sierra, and it's going to have super top secret and more color code hashes for compartment and things. And we're going to announce that only the top 10 people in France can read this special new code word." And the colonel looked at me and says, "Mr. Steele, that's a very French solution." So, you know, we have our obstacles. I actually feel closer to my KGB counterparts than I do to the FBI or to the White House or to anybody else in the U.S. government. Intelligence professionals around the world are very similar in many ways. They have similar mindsets, similar cultures, similar attitudes, and similar obstacles to reform.
Unrelated question, since you mentioned it recently. Could you talk about your knowledge of the Saudi investment in the United States and the role that it's playing in our...
Ripe for nationalization. I would never have let bin Laden's relatives get out of town. That, to me, was an absolutely corrupt act. There's a friendly white-collar prison in Connecticut that I would have asked them all to stay at for a couple of weeks. Or shoot the plane down. So sorry. You know, I mean, what better target as long as they're all there? I've forgotten your question again.
I want to find out the general effect in your view of the immense amount of money that is invested in this country by the Saudis. And what do you think?
I think the U.S. has prostituted itself in multiple ways. You know, Robert Baer's books are the best on this, and he ends his book Sleeping with the Death. He ends his book Sleeping with the Devil, talking about the Saudi corruption of America. He says America is lying there on the bed with her legs spread, looking at the Saudi wallet on the bureau. Great way to end the book. Okay, we've sold out. We've lost our integrity. And we've lost our integrity because our citizens are allowing politicians to make decisions based on money rather than intelligence. You know, this is real simple. You know, we have to take back this government or we're screwed. It's that simple. And unfortunately, John Kerry doesn't seem to get it. I mean, I think because he knows Bush so well from Harvard, I think he's delusional. And I also think that the Republicans are willing to use everything, including assassination, to keep power. I'm serious. I believe that the Republicans have violated the laws in the past. The head of the electronic voting company has told Bush publicly at a fundraiser that he guarantees Bush will win the election. That may or may not have been partly in jest, but this whole electronic voting thing is a mess. I believe that if it's Democratic base against Republican base, the Republicans win. And John Kerry has one shot at winning, and that's by being a dog catcher and making electoral reform the number one issue and by announcing a coalition cabinet in advance, and we're creating a new post for Jell-O, Minister of Culture.
Thank you.
Thanks. This question's a little off the wall, but I've always been curious. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, what happened to the numerous sleeper agents that were no doubt present in the United States?
Don't underestimate the competence of the Soviet KGB. In fact, Oleg Kalugin, who is a retired KGB officer in charge of the First Directorate, has written a book, and he was also elected to the Republican Parliament. And one of the points he made was that he was using open source intelligence as a substitute for agent recruitments. By and large, I think the Soviets were largely ineffective. Now, where they may have had some success was with immigrants and people like that. But you know what? The problem with spying is you actually have to know what you're looking for, and you have to have access to what it is you're looking for, and you have to be able to take it back and make sense of it. It's a lot easier to make sense of the world if you get your act together in open sources first, you know, and then do very selective clandestine stuff. I don't know if the Soviets have many sleepers. They probably have some around the national labs and things like that. But by and large, I think they're focusing more on domestic internal security and eliminating the Tatars and the Chechens than they are on us.
A friend once theorized to me that that since the Soviet Union has no doubt had the technology to build things like suitcase nukes for many years, what are the chances that Soviet operatives were present in the United States for some long period of time during the 1980s, and with such devices?
Very, very, very high, and 2/3 of the 100 suitcase nukes are unaccounted for, according to a Soviet major general.
Where is that information available?
I can't remember. It's in one of the many books I've read. But 2/3 of the Soviet nuclear bombs are unaccounted for, according to the Soviets.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Yes, sir. By the way, I expect one will go off in Australia at the same time that bin Laden hijacks a Pakistani nuclear armed sub and takes out the Bahrain headquarters. Have a nice day.
Okay, I have three spy story questions. Hopefully they will be fun stuff. First of all, there was a book out last year about a spy, I believe, named John O'Neill. The book was, if I remember correctly, The Man Who Warned America. In that, it mentioned that American spies who are on foreign land depend upon American foreign embassies and the ambassador over there for their security and information. But there have been cases where those foreign ambassadors, in the name of maintaining foreign relationships, have been an obstacle to the spies who were working on the foreign land. I want to know about if you have had any such encounters.
It's a two-way street. We have some politically appointed morons as ambassadors who don't appreciate the few positive things that spying can do, but we also have some very arrogant, ignorant chiefs of station who deceive and manipulate ambassadors. It's all human nature. I think we can dramatically improve our foreign service by dramatically increasing their money and their numbers. One of the problems we've had is we've eliminated all the secretaries in embassies. So the junior foreign service officer is now a very expensive secretary. The whole system is broken. I would like to have a university of a republic, a university of the republic, where all seven tribes send their best and their brightest to train at the entry, mid-management, and CEO level. And I would like to have interagency training classes so that for any given country, let's say Sudan, once a year, there is a conference and an ongoing continuing education for every person in the U.S. government touching Sudan. And they all come together and they actually walk away with a roster of who's doing what in Sudan. And then you can extend that to have a more select group that does the seven tribes. So, for example, the European Conflict Prevent, ECCP, European something conflict prevention, is now starting to produce guidebooks to all of the NGO programs, country by country. No one's ever done that before. So we're getting there. The internet is making a lot possible. One more question very quickly, not three.
Okay. Tell us a story, like how did you do it? Some story like a novel or a movie, you know? A spy story, come on.
All right. Well, the best time to do an audio op is when they're building the building. And so you have a construction worker who basically pulls out the sample tiles, and then we prepare two or three, and then they're installed as the tiling is being installed. It works. One of the constant problems we have is when you do install an audio device, you have to find an appropriate place to put the listening post because you have path loss, you know, right, limitations depending on the neighborhood and the environment. So that's the second part of the challenge. The third part of the challenge is getting a listener transcriber who can be trusted to be attentive and yet filter out the 99% of the stuff that's garbage. You know, for every hour of tape, you're going to get at best 5 minutes of useful information if you're really lucky. It's closer to 1 minute. good spying is very labor intensive. Good spying requires really excellent targeting. And most spying today is not worth the money we're paying for it. Another story, the last thing you want to do in the middle of the night in a country with trigger-happy policemen is run a roadblock at 2 in the morning in Alias, in a car rented in Alias. But it helps if you've broken the rules and still have your diplomatic passport with you. So I got out of a scrape there. My worst experience as a spy, I was responsible for penetrating the extreme left in El Salvador, and the colonels in charge of the country thought that I was a leftist sympathizer and threatened to kill me. It really causes you concern when the colonels in charge of a third world country have come to you and said, we're going to kill you. And so I went underground and got an administrative message from the CIA a day later saying, we're already paying for your house. We can't pay for a hotel at the same time. And we sent back a message, what part of assassination don't you understand? So that was scary. By and large, I think spying is like being a cop. I mean, it's 90% boredom and 10% terror. And usually the terror is being induced for the wrong reasons today. There are some pretty good things. I think some of the spying that we did on the Soviet Union, in theory, saved us billions and billions of dollars. There's no question in my mind that CIA has paid for itself with its occasional successes. But by and large, unfortunately, too much of spying today is about cocktail parties and false recruitments and playing the numbers game and reporting stuff that's completely out of context. I actually did an assessment. I was responsible for counterintelligence against a denied area target. And I did an assessment of where that target was present all over the world and then how well we had done against it. Nobody was paying attention to it. Nobody was being held accountable for that stuff. Another true story, just to show you how bad our records are. When I took over that account, I said, all right, give me a list of all the people we know. And they came back with 200 names. I said, this can't be right. I've reported this many just in one tour from one place. So we hired an annuitant to go through all the hard copy files. We ended up, instead of 200 names, we ended up with 3,200 names. So then we asked ourselves, why is it that 3,000 of these names haven't been indexed? So we go down in the basement. Well, it turns out the weak link in CIA is the GS1 barely high school educated clerks responsible for transferring information from messages into the microfiche. So at the end of every CIA message, we say, a field message, we say, index all names. And so these girls, all of whom had a chip on their shoulder, an attitude, for being very poorly paid and basically doing this work. If a message said index all names and it had 1 to 3 names on it, they'd do it. If it were a prisoner or a defector interrogation and it had 50 or 100 names, they'd say shit and move it to the outbox without processing it. That's the weak link in our national intelligence community. The same problem exists at the FBI. It's another spy story. Another spy story, and this actually goes to this incompetence thing. We captured a terrorist once, and the National Guard did us the favor of beating him into a bloody pulp and came up to me with 50 names of his contacts, PLO contacts, all the way down from Canada through Latin America. So we sent a night action to the FBI. This was considered a very high-priority potential plot kind of thing, and the FBI came back immediately with no traces. Well, 80% of the FBI's information is in paper form. And I know they didn't call someone in to go through the paper at night. So it took me 2 weeks to get the legal attaché to send in the trace as if it were her own, and they came back with a 3-page arrest report in the United States and the fact that he'd been expelled from Canada. Okay? I was one of the 2 officers assigned terrorism a full-time target at that time, and the FBI was basically telling the CIA, stick it in your ear, we don't really care about supporting you on terrorism. Okay? Next person.
Thank you.
Wait, haven't you already asked a question?
I did ask one before, but...
All right, let's get someone who hasn't asked one before. All right, I'll tell you what, you just...
It's a quick one. It's not like asking somebody to say stories for half an hour. What do you think is the plausibility of this story or the premise of this story that's being reported, New Republic, I think, that 4 high-ranking Pakistani intelligence officials were being pressured by the White House to capture bin Laden before the election, but more specifically during the week of the Democratic National Convention?
I don't know if they cut it that close, but I have from multiple open sources that the original plan was that the Pakistanis would capture bin Laden and would turn him over covertly southwest of Jalalabad in Afghanistan. In the late July timeframe, for the purpose of making it appear that the U.S. had caught them and not alienating the Muslims. I have new separate open sources that say that Pakistan is reconsidering the deal. And basically, bin Laden is one of 2 heroes in Pakistan. The other one is the nuclear guy. And I think the Americans are extremely naive and foolish to believe that bin Laden will be turned over by Pakistan. I do believe that shortly after the Pakistanis started bulldozing villages in the Waziristan area, which I'm intimately familiar with from open source work that we've done, down to tribal studies and biographies with photos of village elders, I do believe that the Pakistanis very quickly took protective possession of bin Laden after they started bulldozing the villages. I believe, my personal speculation, is that he is in a very comfortable guest house in Pakistan as an honored guest of the Pakistani government, and that his lieutenants are being allowed to fly freely in and out of Pakistan on commercial aircraft without any interruption. I don't know for sure, but Howard Bloom has a multi-person research effort going. The Pakistanis have 3 French Aegis submarines that are nuclear potential. And the Pakistanis have only been building nuclear missiles for submarines. And Howard is very carefully examining, and I have shared this with the Chief of Naval Operations, very carefully examining the possibility that the radical elements of the Pakistani military and the ISI have already agreed to let bin Laden hijack one of these submarines and get far enough out past Sri Lanka to be able to nuke Bahrain. I think we are extremely foolish if we underestimate bin Laden's strategic genius.
Thank you.
2 questions. First one is, I heard a story about how the U.S. Embassy was built in, or I can't remember if it was multiple, but a U.S. Embassy built in Russia. The problem was you couldn't import all the materials in, so you had to mine it locally.
Oh, they wired the place.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was saying, because I heard they put in like random transistors.
Yeah, but the Chinese did it better. The Chinese knew we had metal detectors, so they used ceramics.
And they vibrate or so?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, you know, a ceramic channel from here to there. And then there's a little Chinese guy squatting down there listening. No, actually, I'm serious. They did. It was masterful. They did ceramics. But if you read Jim Bamford's book, Body of Secrets, or I think it's Body of Secrets, he talks about the 5,000-person North Vietnamese signals intelligence group. And these people were digging tunnels up under the G3 sections of Benoit Air Base and other places, and they were actually sending a North Vietnamese guy fluent in English to camp under the G3 shop. And I have never met a U.S. general that is actually willing to use an encrypted phone. These guys define arrogance. And so they're all blowing all these missions in the clear and having conversations from their generals, helicopters, and things like that. The North Vietnamese beat our ass in part because they had really superior signals intelligence.
The other one is I remember listening earlier when you were saying about, I guess you're half jokingly saying about how you probably have a picture of all of us and whatnot. And I was wondering whether or not you did it. How would you go along about getting everyone's photo here, background information? What would you do to bug the entire place or track everyone's conversation?
It wouldn't be worth it.
Well, but I mean, what if it, in theory that you did it, not worth it or not, what would you do? And then back
in theory, there's a camera in one of these grills, and there's a guy in a remote collection who's systematically taking each of your pictures. Then there's a program called FaceTrace, and we just run that against all the DMV records. And try and get some matches there. We check all the hotel records in the area. We have two or three surveillance that are, you know, I mean, you guys got to change colors, you know. Black is kind of obvious. Okay, yeah, he's undercover. You know, and I think within a couple of weeks over the course of 6 years, you know, it would be a fairly simple matter to have a directory. But I don't think it's really that worth it. At least 10 of you are agents for the U.S. government. So, you know, I honest to God, one of the neat things about my life is that I'm a spy who can say it doesn't work. Okay? And that's what makes me cool about open source intelligence. I'm not a librarian saying, please use the library. And so it really wouldn't be worthwhile. As a matter of fact, I think I've said this before. In fact, it wasn't here, but at one of the first InfoWar cons, I debated. Might even have been, I don't think it was Vint Cerf, but it might have been Vint Cerf. I debated someone on the question of, are hackers pathological scum or a national resource? And I think the group, which was 50% government, 50% hackers, I think divided in an even tie. But one of the things that I believe is that hackers are a national resource. And I think that the government fears... I'm doing that just so you won't put ice cubes in my air conditioner duct like you did the first year. But you know, the government fears what it doesn't understand. And the government doesn't understand most of the world, including its own domestic issues and potentials. Next person.
Thank you so much.
I'm not sure to ask the question. May I ask another?
Yeah.
You discussed Sudan several times. You at least brought it up. And I studied Sudan quite a bit for a political science class on the way to my math degree.
Did you read White Nile, Black Blood?
No, and I probably should have. In fact, I ended up not doing... The research I thought was pretty good, in retrospect, not so great. But I found my best resource for current events was, rather than news or any public source, were NGOs.
Yeah, I will take more, thank you. Go on.
NGOs like Human Rights Watch. They seem to have people on the ground really watching who's being hurt today, if nothing else. Do you find them to be a useful resource in the intelligence community?
Like anything else, you know, it's funny. I was not a good economics student, but I learned I could always get A's on my comparative economics exam because whenever the question is, should you use the market model or the command model for this problem, the answer is always a little of each or both. NGOs are mixed. First off, some NGO people are extremely acutely sensitive, aware, informed, and knowledgeable. However, a large number of them are young people that are very stupid and like to drink beer. And so there's an NGO party culture. And a lot of these people, thank you, you know, a lot of these people are out of touch. They're just basically there to be a glorified Peace Corps person and have something to talk to, and they're unemployable anywhere else. So like anything else, every single organization, every single group of people is a mixed bag. And a big part of the human challenge is figuring out which ones actually know what they're talking about. For example, for Indonesia, I have an Australian Army corporal that calls around to the NGOs, and he's got a list of people that basically are proven knowledgeable and are willing to talk, and he chats them up in Indonesian from Australia. Okay?
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I think we're going to stop here in about 4 minutes.
I'll try to make this quick. Also, they may not be within your expertise. This year, the U.S. Navy has done something unusual where they've actually gotten 10 of their 12 carrier groups out into sea all at the same time. Seven of them, which are patrolling around the Pacific right now. You want to speculate any ideas what they might be doing?
I'll speculate. I don't think Taiwan is going to become a flashpoint. I think Bush is vulnerable on a number of fronts. And I don't think we want to pick a fight with China right now. But addressing the Taiwan thing with a presence is one of them. Providing platforms for special forces insertion from offshore and visible points is another one. There is real concern about the Philippines and Indonesia exploding. The Straits of Malacca is a disaster waiting to happen. But I also think that the Navy leadership has been very ineffective. I believe the minimal Navy that the United States needs is 450 ships, including humanitarian assistance fleet and a brown water fleet. And the U.S. Navy admirals are making do with 320 ships of the wrong size. And as a result, we're 6 days away from anywhere of that.
Well, I guess what's bothering me about the whole thing is it's actually a very difficult thing to do, even for the United States.
Sure it is. We're supposed to have one out, one in cycle, and one back.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very costly thing to do. They've decided they're going to do this now, over the summer. And I'm just... it doesn't seem like they're just going out there just to make sure that the Straits of Malacca...
I have no special knowledge.
Okay. Well... The last question is also maybe not be in your expertise. I guess I don't quite understand why I guess the United States government is so heavy in terms of arranging their Navy around carrier groups where, you know, if they were going to be used in a major action, say, against China or something like that, basically a couple of sea-skimming missiles with tactical nukes could take
carriers provide the fastest, most efficient way of transferring money from your pocket to the military-industrial complex.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Would you say that Saddam Hussein was tracked down and captured the way it was reported in the media? Or were there other entities involved that were not disclosed in the media?
I don't have special or privileged knowledge, but all of the reporting that I'm seeing, including informal emails from special forces people in Iraq, are that the national intelligence community had nothing to do with capturing Saddam Hussein. This was, in fact, some very talented reservists that moved I-2, the link analysis program, into the field, and they were on top of every person being debriefed, and they cross-hatched Saddam's family network, which was already known, with defector reports on sightings and other things, and they basically were able to get into the general area, and then Saddam's guards freaked out and abandoned him, and they're running away. They completely missed it. They were at the wrong place. And then when the guards bolted, they drew the attention of the special unit to this little place, and then God bless the alert military guy that realized that he had a styrofoam fake cover. Had the guards done a better job of covering it up, I don't think we would have found them. Very, very expensive manhunt. Yes, sir.
It's a more generic question, but it's obvious what you think of the current administration. But do you think that currently the combination of the liberal media, like Fahrenheit 9/11, Air America Radio, all the publications and books that have come out recently that have been more, I would say, bipartisan than usual all of a sudden will have the effect that you would like to see in the next election?
The short answer is no. If I were John Kerry, I would be cutting the spines off every single one of those books and massively indexing them and then visualizing all of that information. I would have a grand vision for coalition government. I would have a grand vision for very specific solutions for each of no fewer than 21 issues, say 7 national security, 7 domestic, 7 electoral privacy constitutional issues. And I'd be somewhat organized. I think Kerry is the last loser of the Clinton era. Between his staff and his advisors and his mediocre information technology, I am receiving absolutely abysmal crap from his campaign. I got a washed out, badly printed selection of quotes on national security from John and some 12-year-old girl had written at the bottom, "Dear Robert, I know you're concerned about national security. Here's some information that bears on your interests. Love, Angela." Excuse me. Fuck me.
Well, my question isn't what you think about Kerry, but do you think the media and the focus, which has mostly been against Bush and not in support of Kerry.
Wait, wait, what media has been against Bush?
Huh?
Not CNN, not the New York Times.
No. All the books, the liberal media has come out much stronger
than
it liberal
has media?
Previously. Well,
I mean, okay. Name one major authentic liberal media other than Seymour Hersh.
I'm talking about new stuff, like Fahrenheit 9/11.
That might make some impact, but frankly, I don't think it will. Joe and Jane Sixpack are not going to see Fahrenheit 9/11. Neither are the working poor. Neither are the Cubans and the Hispanics.
Okay, but...
And oh, by the way, the Muslims are in the majority now.
Right.
And I'm not at all sure that Kerry is doing a decent job of addressing them.
Right.
You know what? I wrote an article on greaterdemocracy.org saying that if the vote were held today, I would vote for Bush. And my point, which certainly outraged one or two people, my point is that Kerry right now is a placebo. He is a disorganized mess. And although John Edwards is a shining light for the future, right now, in terms of the larger strategic picture, I'd rather have Bush pissing off the world for another 4 years than John Kerry pretending to put a Band-Aid on it. Okay? Kerry isn't even close to winning this election, in my judgment, because let's start with his haircut, okay? That is the most fucked up haircut I have ever seen on a presidential candidate. I mean, that guy has gone one moose too far. His wife is a bitch who has told him publicly in front of senators when he said, come on over to my house, she has said, John, it's my house, okay? We're talking world-class bitch here. Rich bitch. He's Jewish. He's French. I actually did a study of all the Republican attack possibilities on Kerry, and they are almost endless. If John Kerry doesn't get his shit together in the next 30 to 60 days, he's history. Yeah, he's toast. Really. And it's a shame, because this country deserves great leadership. But John Kerry isn't good enough to lead this country by himself. He's got to pick a coalition team, and he's got to get the Greens, the Libertarians, the Independents, and the 25% of the moderate Republicans like me that want to vote for something different. He's got to get us on board, and he hasn't even taken the first baby step in that direction. All right, why don't we... one more, you two guys, and then we'll stop there.
What do all these spy agencies think of stations like WBAI and all our call and comments and everything like that?
I think they ignore them and they're unaware of them.
Have you ever thought of running for office?
I don't know. You know, unfortunately, you guys are, somebody give me a good number, N to the minus 15th of the U.S. population. I don't think I would have the same appeal to Joe and Jane Sixpack, although I do get resonance. I'll tell you, there are direct leaders and there are indirect leaders. Direct leaders are really good at political schmoozing and all of that stuff. I mean, you guys bring out the best in me in some ways. But I am more of an indirect thought leader and reader and thinker, and I would probably be best as a special assistant to John Edwards. And frankly, I hope that if Kerry were successful in winning, I hope Edwards will not make the mistake that Al Gore did. Al Gore and Leon Firth blew it. They had 8 years in which to set up the infrastructure for a follow-on victory, and Leon Firth got really fat and really ignorant trying to keep up with the minutiae of day-to-day national intelligence, national security. If Edwards comes in, he should not focus on being deputy president. He should be focusing on training and equipping the bureaucracy to basically implement reforms that will take 16 to 25 years to see through. He has to take the long term. It is my hope, although I don't expect it to happen. Nader doesn't play well with others. Kerry is not willing to make concessions to Nader. I think the Libertarians and the Greens are basically trash this year. The independents have no leadership, and the moderate Republicans have not been able to find leadership, although there is now sort of a bubbling surge of blackmailing Bush into some very specific compromises for the moderate. The moderate Republicans are starting to rebel on the Hill and elsewhere. And I think Karl Rove has already decided Cheney has to go. And unfortunately, I think America is stupid enough to elect Giuliani Bush and maybe move Sean O'Keefe over to defense. John Lehman will be a disaster at CIA. I don't think that we will make many intelligent policy choices in 4 more years under Bush. But I will vote for Bush. No, I'm going to stop. I will vote for Bush if Kerry doesn't get his shit together. Let's end on that note. Good night.